Tonight on the Goblin's Corner.
MacGuffins and Red Herrings.
That's how we roll.
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 Welcome to the Goblin's Corner. My name is Eric.
And I'm Matt.
And tonight?
MacGuffins and Red Herrings.
Exactly. Which is an interesting subject that you don't hear enough of, I believe.
I agree.
MacGuffins and Red Herrings are something that is definitely plot-driven, I would say. Something that can make your story very interesting. And something that, if you do it improperly, can potentially screw your campaign.
Yes.
But before we get to all of that, I believe you, sir, have a question of the week.
I do. This one's... We're sticking with the on-theme plan.
Okay.
What form would your MacGuffin take if you were to design an object that defeats an ancient evil?
Mm.
And I mean you, Eric, not just for a story, but if Eric was to design an object that defeats the ancient evil.
So part of me wants to do something amusing, and part of me wants to do something badass.
Sure.
So can I answer this in two parts?
Sure.
Okay, good. The first one is... I feel the amusing part of my brain wants to do fuzzy dice.
Okay, sure.
Like my MacGuffin is fuzzy dice. Somehow the fuzzy dice save the world.
Okay, yeah.
The more badass part of me wants to do some kind of just eldritch sword, which is dipped in amber and it's enclosed in this block of steel. And you basically have to do some kind of crazy arcane stunt to... get the sword out. And so this is whole high adventure to obtain the ability to do the thing, to get the sword, to save the town, to get the girl, to make magic powers, whatever, you know, whatever the hell is going on with that. But most likely I would probably just make it fuzzy dice.
Okay. I'm with that. I'm kind of in the same vein as you.
Little column A, little column B.
Yeah. So do you remember the Care Bears?
Yes, I do. Where are we going with this now?
So my MacGuffin is Grumpy Bear.
Okay. A little storm cloud.
Right. It's got the storm cloud,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. Kind of the Eeyore version of the Care Bears. Okay.
But meaner than Eeyore.
Yeah, he really, he was an alcoholic. He drank. You know Grumpy Bear drank.
Sure. Yeah.
It totally is something that I can absolutely 100% see.
He was the dwarf of their adventuring party.
That's pretty accurate, actually. I like that. Yeah, we'll say that works. Okay, so where are you going with this Care Bear?
So, the Care Bear is the safe travel form of the two-handed Thundermatic. And Matic, that sounds like it could be two different things. Mattock, M-A-T-T-O-C-K, like the giant hammers.
Yeah, like a maul.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So the fuzzy form, its travel form, if you will, is the Grumpy Bear Care Bear.
So this fuzzy-ass bear is actually a giant sledge that your local barbarian would be swinging it into the faces of, you know, the orcs or anything else that happened to make him angry.
Human, sure.
An asshole merchant.
And it's a... like, all of its abilities are going to be thunder theme, like Thunder Wave, Thunder Step, right? Like, it gives you no lightning. This isn't Thor, right? This is just straight up
thunder.
Like, screw your sound barrier. We don't do that.
I'm hearing Thundercats in my head. Thunder, 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 maul.
Sure. No.
No, maybe not. No, okay.
Maybe not.
Do you have a MacGuffin or even a red herring that you would like to send to us because it sounds awesome in your head? Write to us, info@goblinscorner.com, or you can reach me, eric@goblinscorner.com, or
me, matt@goblinscorner.com.
And of course, you can find us on all the things.
So many things.
Okay, we've deviated enough from the conversation for this point to, I believe...
Well, we're on the conversation. We're just going to dive into the conversation
Weave the grocery cart of our conversation back to the correct aisle and lane, sir, and we're going to talk about MacGuffins this evening and red herrings.
Right.
But MacGuffins first.
Sure. So first off, what's a MacGuffin?
This is obviously a very important question. Many people don't know what a MacGuffin is, or they might attribute a MacGuffin only to something that you would see perhaps in movies.
It is technically a cinema term.
True, but that's how we can use them in TTRPGs as well. So tell me what a MacGuffin is, Matt.
The MacGuffin is generally an object or thing that is what moves the plot forward. Mm-hmm. Think of like the One Ring or the Holy Grail from Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. The Sword of Truth from Sword of Shannara.
Sure.
Any of those.
Yeah. So MacGuffins are basically a plot device that you can use to pivot a story around or focus on. It's a thing.
Yeah.
It's a widget.
Yes.
To use another make-believe term.
Sure.
It's the widget of storytelling. Yeah. I like that. I'm going to use that.
Okay.
Sell a book on it.
Write that down.
I'm going to write that down. Absolutely. So why have a MacGuffin?
Well, it's an easy way to set up a story.
Indeed.
I mean, that's the primary reason they get used.
Yeah, you can make stories easy to tell. It gives you plot points to start off a story.
Right. It gives your players something to focus on.
Mm-hmm. If you've got some ADD players like we do, or maybe you've hi guys.
That's me.
Yeah, we're talking about you. Or if you've got just a bunch of players that are in general, it's hard to be a storyteller and wrangle cats.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It is. It's difficult, especially when you're doing it spur of the moment. You're making stuff up on the fly. Now you've got some bullet points.
Right.
But you need to focus the characters because they get to the next town. They go off in a different direction, start fighting the local populace, hit a monster, when the whole point in the story is maybe some kind of epic battle that you're building towards, or
right.
You know, whatever it happens to be, right?
Sure.
And so having a MacGuffin keeps your characters kind of eyes on the prize.
Right. I think the first thing we have to say, though, is that a MacGuffin is not necessary.
No.
And right.
It is just a device that helps you and the and your players,
sure.
but it mostly just helps you. So in what ways can it help you tell a better story, Matt?
It is a trigger for plot points. And it doesn't even have to be important in the overall scheme of things so much as its actual importance is strictly dependent on the actual storyteller.
Mm-hmm.
Right. In one of the games you've run, we were sent to collect an amulet.
Yes.
The collection of the amulet was the important thing. The amulet itself was realistically, for that plot point, a MacGuffin, right? It was the thing that we, the players, thought was the important item, when actually the action of getting the item was what the important thing was.
Yeah, and we can explore that a little bit more for a second. So the idea was the characters had to face a planetar, an angel,
right,
and present a coin from their benefactor to let the angel know that he was to give up a particular amulet. And when they did, they thought they had a fight on their hands. They thought they were going to have to fight for the amulet because they were to retrieve this amulet at all costs. And instead, the angel dived out a third story window after ripping his wings off,
yeah.
Died. And the blood stained the ground and started to corrupt the local area. And everybody started turning into demons, and they got the hell out of Dodge. And learned that their employer was not a nice person. And they brought the amulet back, and the seneschal for their employer said, nah, you can keep it. We don't need it.
Right.
You've served your purpose in this job.
Right. For the players, it was the MacGuffin. It was the thing we thought we had to get.
And this could also, interestingly enough, be part of a red herring as well.
Sure. Yeah.
So play a little column A, little column B. Baby. Yeah, so it doesn't necessarily have to be important. Now, it could.
Right.
So go back to the One Ring.
Sure.
Obviously, the One Ring's important, you know.
The Holy Grail.
Yeah. Man, whole lot of shit over a ring of invisibility, man. I mean, really, it's come.
It's a cursed ring of invisibility at that.
I know. It's not even worth it. You can't even sell it. But they'll fight hell and high water to get it. So think about some things that could be a MacGuffin. And going on that, what could a MacGuffin be?
So they can be personal. They could be magical, or they could be mechanical, like a key, right? And mm-hmm. A MacGuffin can literally be anything. The Maltese Falcon was just a statue. It wasn't a magic statue, or it was just...
just a statue. Pricey, right? Yeah, it's just something, an object of desire.
Yep.
I like that you said that it could be personal. What are some examples of a personal MacGuffin?
Signet ring. A signet ring is definitely something that your adventure party might be sent to get to because it's a family signet ring, right? It's an heirloom. It's mm-hmm. important personally, but also you're going to want to keep that out of the hands of maybe someone who ought not have it.
Sure.
Since signet rings are often used to seal documents saying that this is from X person or family.
Now, we're going to weave a little bit away from the screenplay version of MacGuffins in that one of the things that are great about MacGuffins is that they oftentimes can end up becoming a side quest in a tabletop game. Lots of these, oh, by the way, you noticed blank. That is a great pivot point to do a side quest or to do something outside the main storyline. So you can use them either as the main storyline,
sure,
or a veering off point to a side story, either to explore characters or go kill shit.
Sure. Final Fantasies, basically all of them. I don't know about the online game, but all of the actual standalone games mm-hmm. are filled with side quest MacGuffins.
Yeah. Including character MacGuffins.
Yeah.
So Sid, I would say, is a MacGuffin. Yep.
There, I was going to say, people absolutely can be a MacGuffin. Not just that, but specific weapons, right? Specific spells. Anytime you take a wanted object and place it somewhere else on the map, it becomes a driving force for specific characters or the groups in general.
Sure. So not just objects like you mentioned before, but also stuff like something more ephemeral, like power, either power, personal power, or power for a society.
Yeah, political power.
Political power. Oh, yeah. Information could be a MacGuffin.
Yeah, if you go secure a gold mine for a burgeoning town, mm-hmm. their power just increased exponentially.
And you mentioned magic, of course.
Sure.
Or life force would be kind of a cool MacGuffin. I don't know how you'd weave that into something.
Technology.
Technology could also be a MacGuffin as well.
So any type of thing can be a MacGuffin if it's angled the correct direction.
Now, in addition to that, it can be a simple MacGuffin, an expensive or powerful type of MacGuffin as well. Let's maybe give a couple examples of what we're talking about with that.
Okay. Take a very rich, very powerful merchant. Okay. They want a specific chessboard.
I want the chessboard that the dwarf in the Undermountain created 14 millennia ago, and you must dive into Undermountain through the yawning portal and fight various beasts, and on the fifth layer of the eighth block, right next to the Odiug and the dead troll, lie the ruins of Chessopia.
Sure.
Or whatever the hell it is. Yeah.
For them, it is an object of intense desire. It's what they are going to throw an egregious amount of money at you for you to get this thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a chessboard.
But it's a specific chessboard to that.
To that person. They know about it and they want it. And so you can literally just write a story that is nothing but someone super rich or super powerful wants a thing because they want it.
Yep. A couple of other things to consider too. A simple MacGuffin might be easier for either the players to understand, and or might be something that can be easier to empathize with.
Child that's been kidnapped.
A child that has been kidnapped. Child doesn't matter. Like, it matters to, I mean, mechanically in the game, doesn't matter. It is a plot point.
Yeah.
We don't mean that kids don't matter.
No, you're saying that.
They don't, really. But that's, I mean,
you don't believe that.
But yeah, so it's something that can drive the story. Everybody, oh, this kid was stolen. Everybody can feel it in their bones. We got to save that kid.
Right. And I mean, the kid's not going to give you any mechanical advantages. The kid's not going to give you any power. The kid's not.
No.
It's just a child that needs saving.
Now, the kid could be powerful, and we could be fine.
For all we know.
Then you're Eddie Murphy, you know, walking around with a glass of wild. Yeah, I want the knife, please. But that's fine, right? You could have an expensive MacGuffin to give something that the players themselves might desire.
That could be.
That's a nice little fun plot twist. Maybe somebody hires the characters to get something, but it turns out to be very desirable to everyone.
Yeah. Then now we're playing the highest bidder game.
Now you're fighting each other, the NPCs. You might have assassins and thieves coming after your ass. All kinds of shenanigans can come from a desirable or expensive MacGuffin. And then finally, powerful MacGuffins.
And, you know, that's, once again, going back to the One Ring,
sure,
or, you know,
the Ark of the Covenant.
Sure. Anything that is designed also to defeat the ancient evil. I threw up quotes on that for those who couldn't see it. Right.
Yeah, artifacts. They're artifacts. Sure. That's really what it comes down to. Something that pivots a central theme in your story.
Yep. And there are things that need to be discussed when you're doing that type of MacGuffin.
Yeah, because that's a huge thing, right?
Yes.
And we'll get to that in a second, I think. I think let's go a little bit more into MacGuffins, because you mentioned that they generally are objects.
Generally.
Yeah. Generally. And we mentioned it could also be a person or a creature, but why are they traditionally objects?
It is, well, because it's originally a cinema style thing, right? It's easy to shoot around.
Yeah.
Right. You actually brought up the Golden Child, right? The knife is one of the MacGuffins.
That's true.
As well as the Golden Child himself.
Mm-hmm.
But a knife is easy to focus on. And that concept itself also applies to players. Right.
Yes.
Whatever the MacGuffin is, it needs to be something that is easy for them to focus on.
And we're not saying your players are, you know, ADD or dumb or anything like that. What we're saying is that when you're running a story, it's hard to focus on the story and my character's story and playing with a group of people. Running a story is tough.
Yeah.
And we're trying to make it easy for you guys to play and tell stories. Now, if you're feeling froggy and you want to kind of take an extra step, there are lots of other options instead of just having them be an object. So, for example, it could represent something. Just straight up be a metaphor for something.
Well.
And a lot of them are, actually. Like, what is it? The briefcase.
Yes.
In Pulp Fiction. What does that represent? Well, there's a lot of
different beliefs in that.
Mm-hmm.
One is that it's Marcellus Wallace's soul.
Yeah, got a soul in a box, baby. A little briefcase.
But speaking of it being a metaphor, the Odysseus, his entire journey home, right, that huge odyssey is to get home to his marital bliss. For him, home is the MacGuffin.
Or the marital bliss.
Or the marital bliss, right. But that's the MacGuffin, right? Is just the concept of home. And even when he got home, things weren't perfect.
Sure. Yeah, there's all kinds of other shenanigans he got into once he got back.
Right. So that's that metaphor, the whole concept of the perfect home, was his impetus for that journey.
Yes. Now, we mentioned it could be physical again. So person, object, creature, tuna sandwich, whatever it happens to be.
Hey, man, the journey for the perfect tuna sandwich is real.
That's true. Does not start in a Subway.
Ever.
It could also be in the heads of the adventurers or the NPCs that task the adventurers for a quest. And I think this would be kind of, if you want to go like a cerebral journey or a little bit of, you know, high-end storytelling, that might be kind of a fun, like dreamscapes, for example, could be a form of MacGuffin.
Sure. The pure concept of fame, right? What if you're playing a bard group or traveling entertainers?
The fame itself could be a MacGuffin.
Yep.
And so you would drop hints about getting more famous, or maybe there's the most famous bard in the land and that guy represents fame to your characters, and they have to get better at it so that they can jam out, and all your characters are looking like different aspects of the, what is it, Jim and the Holograms, and you guys are ready.
Sure, you can do that.
Going Hanna-Barbera tonight.
Sure, why not?
So think about that. A lot of fun things you can throw in. It doesn't have to just be an object.
So one of the things to keep in mind is the MacGuffin can be more important, in quotation marks, right, than the PCs. But the PCs should never be overshadowed by the MacGuffin. It's their story, right? You guys are sitting down and telling a story together. So the One Ring, or Lord of the Rings, is not told from the ring's point of view.
It's told from the character's point of views.
Right.
And this is something that a friend of mine in improv once told me. It's all about the relationships between the characters and how they interact with each other. So a good example is if someone once told me, if I give you a carrot, what do you do with the carrot? And I say, I eat the carrot. And the guy said, it doesn't fucking matter about the carrot. It's about how you feel about me giving you a carrot. And that's, which, you know, that's true.
It's true.
It doesn't matter. This is because I didn't get a carrot.
Right.
I was on a stage pretending to get a carrot. The same thing goes with the MacGuffin. There's not an actual MacGuffin object that your players are going after. It's just words that you're telling them. And what's important is what's important to them and you, but mostly what's important to them to continue the story along.
How does it tie them to the narrative?
Yep. It's a plot point.
And how do they react to it? You know, there are going to be characters who despise the fact. And I mean in play, right? There are going to be characters, not players. Mm-hmm. But there are going to be characters that despise the fact that there's a MacGuffin. That the fate of humanity rests in the fact that some clown buried a small box under an active volcano surrounded by traps.
Had to have a lich's soul there. They buried it in a volcano, knowing the lich is going to get free. Now he's got an undead army and I got to kill his ass. Now I got to go find the anti-lich sword.
Right.
So the stupid ass MacGuffin, there's going to be some people that hate that. There's going to be some people that love that. Oh yeah, I'm going to get the sword. I'm going to be the hero. There's going to be some people that might covet it. I'm going to sell this sword.
Yeah.
Or whatever. Whatever it is, they should feel strongly about it.
Yeah.
Or have some sort of opinion. But the actual MacGuffin doesn't matter.
Right.
Now we've got a couple of examples from film and TV, but we also came up with a couple extra ones as well. So one of my favorite one is I don't know if you ever watched The Man with One Red Shoe.
I have.
So the one red shoe, I would say, is a MacGuffin of some sort. Or at least it was a plot point.
Yeah. I don't, I mean, it kind of is, but I think it's is it more of a red herring though?
Maybe. It might've been a red herring.
Because the one red shoe wasn't actually, well, I think in that story, it was a MacGuffin for some people and a red herring for other people.
I will definitely buy that, and I'm curiously awaiting people to write to us to disagree.
As they should.
As they should. Yeah, you shouldn't really. I don't know. I don't fucking care. It's, yeah, just figure it out. Figure it out and tell us. How about that?
Words. We're just giving, the word
we're giving
thing.
You something.
All right. You mentioned the Golden Child
the
already.
The Golden Child is definitely a MacGuffin. And you mentioned the knife to get the Golden Child. That is certainly a MacGuffin.
Yep. You also mentioned the briefcase.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously.
From Pulp Fiction.
Right. But the one that you wrote down that I'd never really considered, amongst all the things that we're talking, R2-D2.
R2-D2 is a MacGuffin.
100%.
And without R2-D2, there would have been no Padme.
Without R2-D2, there literally would have been no story.
Yeah. He's the secret hero of Star Wars, guys. He's been through every episode. Except for like the Old Republic, but I mean,
right?
But like all of the trilogy, the what is it?
The nine, trilogy of trilogies.
The trilogy of trilogy. Yeah, the nine.
The Noctet. I think it's a Noctet.
I'll buy that.
And he's not a snitch.
No, man, he keeps his mouth shut.
He knows everything about everything, and the whole time he's just been like, yeah, but
that's because only C-3PO can understand him. Bleep bloop bleep blop.
He's like, wow.
He says that Princess Leia is your sister. Nah, that can't be it. Come on.
All right. But yeah, no, he is 100% the most powerful character in that.
I would also say the death, and another one I was thinking of also is, if you ever watch Twin Peaks, the death of the girl, I can't remember her name, but her death, maybe even the girl herself, would be kind of a MacGuffin as well, because it kind of drove the whole story.
Gotcha.
To try to solve her death.
I have not seen it.
You haven't seen Twin Peaks?
No.
You should watch it.
Yeah, it's on the list, man.
It's only been around for, you know, like 20, 30 years. We've got a couple more creative ones that we've come up with as well, which I really like this first one.
Stolen information on a data stick.
Does it matter what the data is?
It does if it's Johnny Mnemonic.
Good point. But if it's a MacGuffin, you may not even know what that data is.
Yeah. You may not be able to get into it, but you know that there's a whole lot of people trying to kill you for it.
They're going to try to.
That's all that matters.
They're going to try to rip your cybernetics out, man. They're going to clamp you down, gaze at you with a baleful eye, and there come the lasers and the scalpels. Rip that out of your head. A magical statue could be a MacGuffin.
Sure.
Just any old magical statue, or just a plain old statue, too.
A key.
A key could also be straight-up key.
Yep. Some unknown horror beyond the door.
Yeah, if you're playing like some kind of eldritch horror game or mystery, maybe the storyteller alludes to something behind this door. Maybe it's the door of your boss that's giving you jobs, or maybe it's something that you have to access, but you can't get into the door, but you don't know what it is. Be a fun MacGuffin to kind of consider.
Yeah.
A particular crime against someone in power could be a MacGuffin. So something that might have started a war between two nation states.
Mm. And the solving of that crime is the actual, would be a great plot line for that.
Mm-hmm. Or a fuzzy bat.
Just a
fuzzy bat.
Just a fuzzy bat.
It could be literally anything. And that could be fuzzy bat as in wiffle ball bat or baseball bat or a flap around echolocation bat.
Or like a stuffed bat.
Or a stuffed bat. I'm fine with that too. So
I mean, think about Citizen Kane, right? Have you seen Citizen Kane?
Yes.
Okay. The whole secret at the end is literally something that was only important to Citizen Kane.
Sure.
That was 100% a MacGuffin.
It's all about it. So, again, a couple ideas that we can throw at you, that you can throw at your characters to write better stories for your tabletop game. We've got more in store for you. We've got red herrings coming up next, but first, we're going to take a short break.
Sounds good to me.
This episode is sponsored by
Are you looking for a D&D podcast with a dark side? Something more like Game of Thrones and less like Monty Python? Tale of the Manticore is part dark fantasy audio drama, part solo D&D RPG. There's no plot armor here. The dice make all the important decisions. Join me as I resurrect the excitement, wonder, and emotion of old-school D&D. Made for a mature audience, Tale of the Manticore is both a fiction and a game. It's the story where chaos rolls.
If there are any topics you would like us to cover, goods or services you would like us to review, or if you would like to sponsor an episode, we would love for you to contact us at info@goblinscorner.com.
And we're back.
Welcome back.
All right, so we're talking about MacGuffins and red herrings, and we just got done kind of...
MacGuffining
you.
And now it's red herrings time.
Yeah, let's talk about this red fish. So what's going on with a red herring? Or more specifically, what is a red herring?
According to the definition, a red herring is something, especially a clue, that is intended to be misleading or distracting.
Thank you, Wikipedia. So why would you... Yeah, it's just something that distracts characters or plot or story, whatever the sure. focus is. Into something else. Why would you mislead or distract your characters in a tabletop game, Matt?
Oh, so many reasons.
Because you're an asshole.
Personal enjoyment. That's, yeah. I mean, clearly that's the top of the list.
Just want to see them writhe around in their chair and get mad.
But what is it about?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, there's lots of reasons to do it.
Sure. I mean, number one, to further a storyline or to draw out a storyline.
The draw out one is a really interesting one, and I want to wax philosophical for a second on that, because there's a lot of times when you are playing and characters do something, maybe they're just about to get to the bad guy, and that's all you've written.
Right.
You didn't expect them to get this far. They bypassed five or six things way quicker than you thought, and you got to draw the story out. You got to start, you know, you need that 7 seconds in your head to come up with something else, and so you... give them a red herring. So while they're off dicking around doing something else, you can kind of on the back burner come up with, okay, what are they going to do next?
Sure. And the other thing is especially if you're running a mystery style game, right? If a couple of astounding rolls or something like that is about to shortcut what was intended to be a 4 or 5 session game, well, one of the clues they found with their super high roll
takes them on a wild goose chase.
Takes them on a wild goose chase because they happen to find something at the scene that didn't belong to the murder scene.
Hey, man, I wrote all this story out for a murder mystery. You guys bypassed half of it. This is going to make a terrible story. Send them on a wild goose chase. Let them get into some trouble. Come back to the story that you wrote, and everybody will be happy.
Sure. And, you know, a good example of that is you find a body. You find all of the clues.
Mm-hmm.
One of the clues you find is a note written by a famous personage. So you do all the stuff that's necessary to go visit this famous personage so that you can find out what their connection is. They were just high school friends. Right? They just...
Or he's on a train that's heading to Pennsylvania, and you got to board that train, and you get on that train, and you're on that train, and you reach up, you grab that guy by the collar, and you're like, I'm Batman. And they find out that, yeah, he was just some asshole. Like, he just happened to
their actual acquaintances.
He's my buddy. We smoke cigars every Thursday and drink brandy. Yep. Yeah. Something like that. Yeah, sure. So, and then they got to go, hold the thing, get off the train, go all the way back to their town, go back to Gotham City, find the real person. Another thing that a red herring does is provide information characters know instead of what the players know.
Right.
Now, I want to stress this because that sounds a little crazy. Well, why would you give me something that the characters would know instead of what the players know? Metagaming.
Yes.
Metagaming happens. If you play with a bunch of people, like we do, who happen to... I don't know, like a good example, Forgotten Realms. A bunch of our friends have played Forgotten Realms for years. Eberron as well. We've played Eberron for a while. Most people if you mention, you name drop anybody or city, what have you.
And in some cases, just the description is enough.
Sure. If you find a wizard, he flies in, he's got this pipe that's following him. Oh, it's got to be the Sage of Shadowdale, Elminster. Look at his long wispy beard and his affinity for long monologues and crying.
In the cold, cold,
in
cold
the cold,
winter.
Cold winter, he cries.
Okay.
A lot of crying.
So we're going to keep moving.
Yeah, a lot of weather in that.
We're
book,
keeping it
book.
Moving.
Yeah, we'll get to that some other day. Anyhow, so you give them a red herring to kind of throw them through a loop.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not who they expected it to be. Could be a clone. Could be Manchun. That'd be
speaking
funny.
Speaking of clones,
yeah. So keeps them from metagaming. One of the best red herrings that I love to do is give monsters different powers.
Sure. Or just make them different in general.
Or just make them different, yeah. Instead of a round spherical beholder, you've got a square boxy beholder or whatever.
Oh, you had a non-aggressive aboleth.
Ah, yes, the aboleth. And this brings us to the third point of doing a red herring, which is give them a surprise twist. It doesn't have to be, what's that movie?
The Sixth Sense?
Thank you. I need, yeah.
The Usual Suspects is the one I was going for, but I knew you were thinking of The Sixth Sense.
I was thinking The Sixth Sense. He literally pulled that from my head. That's awesome. And I love that you also mentioned The Usual Suspects, because that was number two on my list that I was going to list. Yeah, it doesn't have to be something like that. It doesn't have to be like, oh my God, he was dead all along.
But if you can pull that off, all the props to you.
Yeah.
We are for that. But it doesn't have to be that astounding.
To put it to perspective, M. Night Shyamalan did it once, effectively. So, I mean, like, if you can pull it off, great. I actually have done a red herring that ended up surprising people. The Number Dragon. Where they literally went and created the villain because they went back in time and realized that by trying to go after this guy and they warned him about the villain, the guy goes, that's me, and they made the villain. It's great. But it doesn't always happen.
Nope.
That was my Shyamalan moment.
I have run a campaign with a prophetic child. I throw up my air quotes again. That was only prophetic because they were the evil one all along.
I like that. That's great.
And all of these great prophecies and evils that the child foresaw, he foresaw.
Because I'm about to do them.
Because he was the one planning
I'm about
them.
To wreck stuff, guys. Yeah, I love that. That's great. So, yeah, a couple of ideas there. And finally, to remove players' preconceptions of a particular NPC or culture or society or even world.
Yeah.
Just mix it up. So red herrings are great for stuff like that.
Here's a great example. If you're playing a, and Clue did it actually, but if you're playing an intrigue or a murder mystery type game,
mm-hmm.
The butler is an undercover cop.
Ooh, I like that. Cause most people assume
the butler did it.
Yeah. Clue. So maybe make it somebody else.
Sure.
Make
it somebody else, but
he's Batman.
He's sure. That would be great.
No, actually, he's Jim from Jim and the Holograms. That'd be even better. I don't know.
Where's your brain tonight?
My brain, I don't know.
I mean, clearly with Jim and the Holograms.
Either that or, for some reason, my brain keeps going to the Mystery Machine and I'm thinking, because red herrings are part of the Scooby-Doo stuff all day long. It's old man Withers up on the hill, that crazy old guy up on the hill. What a god it was for you meddling kids. Now,
80% of the clues they find are red herrings right up until
they accidentally unmask the guy. Yeah, so think Scooby-Doo, guys. Now, it should be noted that you should use these sparingly.
Yes.
And Matt, maybe you can go a little bit more into explanation about that.
Okay, so if you use them sparingly,
mm-hmm.
they can provide dramatic tension. They can be used to introduce interesting characters or story developments, or even a good way to throw humor into a situation. If you use them wrong, they just piss people off.
I completely agree with that.
Because if you spend 3-4 gaming sessions
on something that does not
pay off, nobody is going to be amused.
Yep. Because remember, they might be focused on that MacGuffin. You've given them a red herring. They're still focused on the prize.
Right. So, and there are methodologies to that. And the first methodology is it should have the potential for huge payoff, but at only a very moderate investment, right? If you're on a time clock,
mm-hmm.
and this particular clue seems like it might wrap things up super quick, that's a very moderate investment for a very big payoff.
Yeah.
So you can't, or you shouldn't, I would say, have someone follow a red herring, run the clock out, and they automatically fail.
Yeah, because that's screwing the characters. And honestly, it's kind of screwing yourself as a storyteller as well, because you want the characters to win eventually.
Right. So, but what it does do is if you make them waste some time, that clock matters even more now.
So what you're referring to is the dramatic tension.
Right.
Because they got to race, just like in every single action movie, the clock's ticking, the bomb's about to go off. They always deactivate that damn bomb 10 seconds before it blows up, or 1 second before it blows up.
When it's 0-0-0.
Yeah, 0-0. It's like, oh, it hasn't gone off yet. I'm so just in time.
Sure.
If I'd scratched my nose before it went off, I would have been vaporized by plastique. So it should not cause a failure. It should just ramp the tension up.
Right. The other thing is it shouldn't be a total loss.
What do you mean by that?
Okay, so let's say, take again, the murder mystery, right? You don't find the killer, but maybe the person you did end up coming into contact with knows something.
Mm-hmm.
They saw something. Maybe they picked something up from the crime scene.
They were a clue.
Right. And so the red herring is not the killer, but it's a clue towards the killer. So you didn't wrap it up, but you now have one more piece of that puzzle. If it's intrigue-based, maybe the players get to pick up a contact.
I can agree with that. And another thing, it allows them to not be completely empty-handed with something. They can gather those clues themselves. It kind of helps them, especially like murder mysteries or intrigue, figure things out. Because, again, sometimes clues are tough. You know, your players may not be detectives,
right,
but they're playing detectives. And if you kind of got to throw them a bone here and there to make sure that it works out for them. Because remember, you're building a story together.
And keep in mind, when you're writing any sort of detective-y type storyline or anything like that, your brain does not work the same way as your players' brains. Your players could be absolutely brilliant. But if they're not on the same wavelength as you, something you feel is super obvious, they might just literally have no concept of, because you made a mental jump automatically because you know that armadillos are the only animals that contract leprosy other than humans.
Yeah, try playing charades with your friends and find out how well they think they know you or they understand how your brain works.
Yeah.
It's tough.
And, you know, there you'll have people you're completely in sync with and people you're completely out of sync with. So don't assume that something like that's super simple.
Now, there's a couple of things you can do with red herrings that I enjoy using them for. The first is you can use them to insert lore or some sort of personality into your world. Give it a uniqueness, a flavor, that like a fine malt beverage.
Sure.
Or, you know, a nice Bloody Mary.
Yeah.
The Bloody Mary of your world can be tailored to that using red herrings.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, and the personality thing is a great, I had an example for the personality one, right? What if the body's found in a specific neighborhood.
Okay.
And you're asking around the neighborhood and one of the guys is like, oh, that dude over there, he's completely creepy. He's always around and he's always, you know, spying on people, blah, 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 blah. Maybe he just hates his neighbor.
Just the guy's just a terrible neighbor.
That dude borrowed his lawnmower once. He never got it back. And he's just like, I've hated him ever since. So he's trying to sell that dude down the river over a lawnmower 15 years ago.
Fell prey to the demon of bad neighbors is what he did.
Exactly.
Yeah, got him. If you haven't heard our Minor Fiends episode, go back and take a listen.
But yeah, so that's a personality thing though, right? That's has nothing to do with anything other than two neighbors that don't get along.
Yep. So add a little color personality. You can use them to provide a pleasant or unpleasant surprise for characters. So I'll talk about the movie Labyrinth.
Yeah.
And one of the first things that came to mind was Sarah saw the fairies and Hoggle was spraying them with bug spray. She picks the fairy up and it bites her.
Right.
And he's like, what did you expect them to do? Okay. So that's a crazy surprise. We go back to the Aboleth that you mentioned before. The characters in the game that I was running happened to find out that they needed to venture to find an oracle. And as they manage to get all the way to the oracle, this Aboleth pops up out of the water. And they assumed that they were going to have to fight it. And turns out the oracle was the Aboleth.
Right.
And it happened to eat really smart people.
Just before they were going to die.
Just before they were going to die. And it was an honor to be devoured by this Aboleth because it now retained all of their memories.
Right.
And he was a decent person.
Yeah. Far as we knew. There are some of the players that still don't trust him.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he could have just been lying. You guys really don't know. And
whatever.
And finally, again, and this is more of like inserting lore and personality, but you can also use red herrings to flesh your world out a bit, especially when you need, as I mentioned before, time to create your world. So if you're running a little late in the brain department and you need to kind of come up with something, or sometimes you get an idea. This is what happens to me all the time. You guys are doing something, you mention something funny, and I was like, oh, this would be a great side quest or an idea.
Stolen.
I take that idea and build upon that, expand upon that, and then it becomes something that we've both created together. But it takes time.
Yep.
So use red herrings in your world for those purposes. Now, Matt, you've got a couple of really good examples, and I think you mentioned the first one already, but let's refresh on that one.
Again. Oh, yeah, it was. One of the ones I was suggesting was maybe the rumor you heard was because someone doesn't like their weird-ass neighbor, or the person creeping around at night was actually just a burglar or even an undercover watchman.
So it didn't have anything to do with the actual murder. I love that it was maybe an undercover, like, night watchman, or maybe someone from the neighborhood watch.
Yeah.
And then you have to track this guy down. He's like, dude, I've just making sure there's no crime going on. It's awesome.
You failed. There's a corpse here. But
maybe there's a secret society that has nothing to do with what's going on in your campaign. You might have like a secret cult. Maybe it's a secret sex cult. Who knows? It could be anything. And PCs break down the door and they're all, you know, getting freaky. It has nothing to do with the evil plaguing the land. You're like, damn it, I thought it was these guys that were doing everything. And they're just a secret society of people wanting to get their freak on.
Now, remember, cults are two episodes from now. So don't.
That's a good point. well, we've given you a free one.
There you go.
Secret sex cult. Okay.
You defeat a monster in a dungeon and get a chest key in the loot, but it's a random key that doesn't open anything in this dungeon.
And maybe it'll do it some other time.
Maybe.
We mentioned this, by the way, in our Building Better Traps episode. Because remember, you went off on the monster that just collected keys from random dungeons. Oh, what a great random adventure. I found these keys. They've got to unlock. And then they go everywhere, all trying to unlock every single door they can find. And it just happened he likes keys.
Yeah. He just just a key, man.
And while the PCs are trying to open everything else, you're planning other traps or whatever's going on in the real world while this is happening.
Hey, you're paying, you're doing your taxes, you're paying bills. Yeah, you're like, no, it doesn't work on that.
Had your second kid, you've already written your book, you know, you're ready to go.
Oh, this one's yours. What you got here?
The villain the PCs are after has been spotted at the train station. I kind of alluded to one of these.
Right.
The players board the train like Batman. It leaves. It turns out to be someone that was paid to get them on the train so that the villain can escape and then become a returning villain. You don't want your villain to die. You know, you've got this idea, I'm going to make this villain kind of a reoccurring villain, but you know your players are min-maxers. You know they're going to kill him in like 2 rounds.
Yeah.
It's just going to happen. So they're after this guy. He ducks down a door. He goes left. They go right. And then someone's like, he went there to the train station. You guys board the train station. You're on the train. You're looking for him. He was paid. And you find out later. Now, guy comes back. He's returning villain.
Yeah.
And got away.
I mean, you could even, like, the guy could just be like, whoa, hey, this guy told me that if I wore this jacket, he'd buy my ticket. Man, I've been trying to get home for months.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't have to be anything nefarious. It could just be something that, you know, guy was just, oh, I thought it was a lucky day.
Yeah. That is, that would make a great serial killer campaign.
There's a bunch. Yeah, well, that comes directly from film too. A lot of serial killers where they look like somebody else, and you know the police are after the guy, and they grab him, they tackle him to the ground. And it turns out to be just some dude that wore the same coat and hat as the killer.
Right.
It's always fun. And finally, a corporation has a report of a cybercrime under a legendary hacker. So they're using this. They've heard that this legendary hacker's doing these crimes, but actually they're just using the hacker as a scapegoat for them embezzling money within the corporation.
So the movie Hackers.
Yeah, basically. And all the people are cattle. Moo.
Hack the planet.
Oh yeah. You know, well, you got to hack the planet. I mean, look, when times get tough, my friend, you better get your spray paint and spray down your Apple II
laptop.
So ridiculous.
Oh my God.
It was so ridiculous, but it still was a great movie.
Oh yeah. It was super fun.
It was fun. So these are a couple
and it
of
has one of my favorite actors in it. I love Matthew Lillard, man. He's
sure. Why not? Yeah. He's
serial killer.
Yeah.
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 He's great.
He was great. He was great. So these are a couple of examples for MacGuffins and red herrings that you can use within your campaign or elongated story, if you're doing a, you know, extended type thing,
yeah,
to draw it out, have fun, add a little bit of color, yeah, mess with your players.
Give them some new contacts, some new enemies.
Yeah, some side quests.
Yeah.
And all that other sort of stuff.
Because depending on how they handle a red herring, right, that could also, could have its own consequences.
Might become the MacGuffin, might become the main storyline. Who knows?
Yeah.
That's the way it works. Do you have a red herring or a MacGuffin that you'd like to share with us? Feel free to write to us, info@goblinscorner.com, or you can reach me, Eric, @goblinscorner.com, or
me, Matt, @goblinscorner.com.
We've got a website, goblinscorner.com, where you can find us on all the things. We have a Twitter.
We're @goblinscorner.
We have an Instagram.
@goblinscorner.
The Goblins Corner, sir.
The Goblins Corner.
We have a Twitch.
At Goblins Corner.
No,
it's just Goblins. Yeah, it's just Goblins Corner.
Yeah. We've got a Facebook.
We're the Goblins Corner.
We've got other things.
We
got a Discord.
We have a Pinterest and a Discord.
Discord channel. Come have a chat with us. And again, you can find it all on the website. And we're on everywhere you like to listen to.
Yeah, like everywhere.
And if we're not on there, tell us. We'll be there.
Yeah.
We'll show up at your house with the boombox.
We'll say anything action. Just hold it up over
we'll
our
show
heads.
Up with the karaoke machine. And just, I'm ready to rock.
I'm going to let you do karaoke.
I'm going to get a wig that has a mullet in the back. I'm
sure,
ready to go.
Sure.
That's all the time we have for today.
That's more time than we needed.
More time than we needed. That's all the time we have for today. Once again, my name is Eric.
And I'm Matt.
Have a great week.
Good night.
The Goblin's Corner is written and produced by Eric Holden.
and Matt Staples.
Show song by the mighty D20.
This is a Subterranean production.
Basic.